Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, my guest is going to be Helen Conroy, and Helen Conroy is the Executive Director of Team Thinking Moms Revolution, or Team TMR. And this is a large group of parents or mothers of autistic children, and they get together and try to make a difference. So I am anxious for her to call into the program and tell us what she has been working on. Oh, she's here. Wonderful. I will pick up Helen Conroy immediately.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, Helen. Thank you very much for calling in. I'm going to bring up why I initially asked you to come on the show, because it's such an amazing breakthrough in terms of having statistics. When you were on Robert Scott Bell's show, something had been discussed that I thought that you had been the one who had provided the statistics for, but I want to announce what it is because it's so important. He was saying that in Cuba, they have a 99.7% vaccination rate, and however, because Tylenol is not allowable for children, their autism rate is 298 times less than ours is with a lower vaccination rate. And basically what he was saying is that your ability to fight off the poisons within vaccines is so diminished by having Tylenol administered before, during, or after the vaccines that this is what allows, I ran the numbers on this, it's 1 in 15,000 autistic in Cuba, if what he's saying is correct. That puts us back before 1980 in the United States.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty amazing conversation, to be honest. We definitely fall into the camp with my own child where we gave Tylenol before and after every vaccine, starting from, you know, so to hear that, to me, made a lot of sense. And in my own experience, you know, I was telling Robert this, I actually, we did a homeopathic Tylenol clear at one point for my son, and he had, a 100.7 fever for about 9 days while we did this Tylenol clear, and then he came out the other side with huge gains. So when this research came out, really, I felt like it was no surprise to us. We definitely saw, you know, I definitely felt like there was a link there. So it's good to have some actual solid research behind that.
Yes, you said he came out the other side with, and I lost those two words.
Oh, he made definite gains.
Oh, he made definite gains. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Kathleen Dunkelberger, she's a nurse. She wrote No Vaccines for Me. And she said that she has felt this way for a long time. And I thought, oh, my goodness, isn't this incredible? Now that it's come out, it's coming out everywhere. But I don't know that she had the statistics that Robert had. So that was, it's important to get statistics because it's all conjecture unless you have real hard facts, you know. But now you are the executive director of Team TMR, which is Team Thinking Moms Revolution. And how long have you been involved with the Thinking Moms Revolution?
I'm one of the original founders of the group. We kind of met and created it back in 2011. Our goal at that point was really to write a book to share our stories with other parents. You know, if you're really involved in the autism community and you have a supportive family and friends, then you feel support. But there are a lot of parents out there that are very isolated, that don't get family support, that live in rural towns and nobody else, you know, is going through what they're going through. So we wanted to give those parents a voice and really validate what they were going through. And that's really how the Thinking Moms Revolution started. We started working on a book, and it kind of evolved into a blog and a media platform and now events and other things. when we started that, we really, our intent was always to give back, but we were trying to get up and running pretty quickly, so we formed an LLC under the Thinking Moms Revolution. We've just now, you know, raised enough money and things like that to start the not-for-profit arm of that, so that's what we called Team TMR. And so now we'll be doing grants for all types of treatments that aren't maybe covered in other places that, you know, parents can have an option to come and apply for a grant to do some treatment for their children to help them, you know, along their path.
Isn't that wonderful? Congratulations.
You're so organized,
and you sound very young. I've interviewed already. The first person of the Thinking Moms Revolution was Kim Spencer. And she said that today, one in two children has a chronic illness, and I was blown away by that statistic. I've also interviewed Lisa Joyce Goes, and we had a long conversation, and so you are, is it the three of you? Who exactly created it? Yourself?
There are 24 of us that actually created the group originally. And it's funny, we met, we were all using a practitioner, and someone started a Facebook support group. And so we met on that group, and, you know, it kind of evolved into another group and another group, and kind of we became these close-knit group of friends that really we weren't only, you know, at first it started you were exchanging information about what treatments were working for your child. But we became really invested in each other. And, you know, it would be something where, you know, at midnight if my child was up screaming, what do I do? I would hop on Facebook to this, you know, private group of 23 other parents, and someone would be awake and say, try this, this worked for me. Like, you know, and so that's really how we all started. And then from there, it was a natural thing to kind of branch out and say, how else can we support other parents who are going through the same things we are?
Well, Ava, this is very important, how universally everybody can help each other. You could even be in other countries and helping each other. Do you have, like, for example, NDIC has a state leader for their group? They break it down by state and then what have you. Do you have something like that as well where people can get involved and be their state leader?
Well, that's one of the goals of Team TMR. So that's something that we're working on right now. We piloted our first meetup group in Chicago, and Lisa Goes was the one that piloted that. And we're tweaking that, and then we'll roll out a few more. The nice thing about TMR is that we're really international because we have, these 24 founders. There are a number of founders in the U.S., but we also have some of our founders live in Canada and the U.K. and even Malaysia. So it's kind of nice that we'd be able to do a universal scope as well. But yes, we will have meetup groups coming. That's more of a goal for us this year and next to kind of get those out. But we want to be, you know, very organized about how we do that. But they are coming.
Right. Well, I find myself as a person who interacts on Facebook a lot in regard to vaccines. I am interacting with the people whose first language is English, you know, so I'm interacting with people in the UK and Canada and Australia. But I'm thinking possibly it would be really helpful to have people who were multilingual, pull in other countries as well, because there are a lot of things that are going down in other countries that we are not apprised of, and perhaps we could get vocal in preventing some of these mass inoculations that are leaving children paralyzed throughout the world if we were, multilingual. If you could get somebody in your group who is Spanish-speaking or Arabic or, you know, any number of languages, so that they could represent on what's happening in these parts of the world as well, and just to more unify people, you know?
I agree.
I am appalled when I find out what happened after a vaccine campaign. And I thought, oh, gosh, could we have prevented it were we to have known about this in the English-speaking world, you know? So in Syria, we didn't drop a bomb on them, but we went in with a triple oral polio to 22 million of these children in the Middle East. That there's your war. There's no bomb that could have done more harm than that.
Yeah, I will say for us, we have one mom that's French, and she's translated a lot of our material into French because in France, you know, they are decades behind the U.S. in terms of autism and treatment and the causes and things like that. And actually, it's funny, one of our biggest, you know, when you track our blog by, you know, readership by city, one of, you know, always in the top two or three is Brazil for some reason. Now, we don't, you know, write in Portuguese, but I guess there's enough people that are speaking English down there that, you know, are reading our things. So it's kind of funny that where that reach actually goes in and comes from. But, yes, I agree.
Well,
it would be great if we could translate into a number of languages.
Right, that, and also I think if you have a website, you can translate it as well. There's some kind of an instant translate. I don't know that I can do this with my blog personally, but I would love to because I find, you know, I'm in the streets. I'm kind of more local even than I am working with people around the world. I'm constantly in the streets. What I'm finding, I have a very international community that I live in. What I'm finding is the purple screams are coming from the houses of the people who do not speak English. So I am finding that I am reaching people. I'm reaching lots of people. Everyone in my neighborhood knows me. But the people I haven't reached are the ones who don't speak English, and these are where the purple screams are coming from. It is so heartbreaking. So this is why it's so important to communicate as many ways as we possibly can.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, so do you get together annually and have meetings, or do you have local groups that have get-togethers, or is it a social thing?
Well, I will say the first time we all met in person was at the Autism One conference in Chicago, which is coming up Memorial Day weekend in May. So that was the first place we ever got together. You know, we'd been probably together as a group for almost a year at that point and felt like, hey, this is some place that we can go meet and talk to each other in person. And that was at that event, that's where the idea for the book came up, and then the book turned into the blog and other things. So, yeah, we do get together annually. It's typically at Autism One. Because it's such a great event, it's really cutting edge in treatments and things like that. So we'll be there again this year as well.
Well, I tell you what, I live in New York City, and right now I'm talking to the Health Committee of the New York City Council for three reasons. One is to create a vaccine-free NYC by banning vaccines totally. Another one is to undo an appointed panel's mandatory of flu shots to the youngest. And another one is to eradicate what New York City is experiencing solely, which is a 1.2% cap on religious exemption, which goes against, flies in the face of the state. So basically, I need more people here in New York City who can help me when I'm addressing these committees, when I'm addressing the mayor, when I'm addressing the health department. Can you hook me up with people here in New York City that can help these fights with me?
Sure, I'd be happy to post something on our blog and our Facebook page.
Well, I have an event,
ask mom.
Thursday. I have an event this Thursday. I'll tell you about it right now. We're dancing for a vaccine-free NYC. We've jammed for one. We've marched for one. We do everything for a vaccine-free NYC. And if I could send you, and I'll put it underneath the video, so that you can let people from the Thinking Moms Revolution, let them know that we exist, because we must grow our numbers in order to have the effect that is somewhat urgent. We are really, we're up to 54 doses through the age of 5, plus they approved, this appointed panel approved any new additional vaccine which may be required through the age of 5, and there are 271 in the pipeline. I am quaking in my boots.
I know. We actually used to live in Westchester County, and that was before we had children, and now I can't even imagine moving back to New York, which is sad, but it's just it's not compatible with my beliefs anymore.
Well, the thing is, I don't have children who are subjected to this, but I want grandchildren who will never be subjected to this. So I feel like I'm fighting for a future I'm hoping to have.
Yes, absolutely. I'd be happy to put that information on our Facebook page and try to reach the New York City area moms.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much because we can do a lot if people will, you know, we're 8 million dense here in New York City, and we have extraordinary rules beyond that of the state, which is the only situation I know of its kind. So I really do need help. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Now, let us talk some more about what your plans are for Team TMR.
So Team TMR really evolved because many of us did biomed with our kids and did, you know, the autism treatments that you start out doing, B12 shots and you know, fighting yeast and bacteria. And we made some progress, but not enough. And so we turned to different, you know, therapies. And when I say different, I mean we have run the gamut. We have people, you know, that see Dr. Krigsman down in Texas and do pediatric, you know, gastroenterology. And we have people that, you know, do homotoxicology and homeopathy and have really seen tons of gains. But there aren't really grants out there that address, you know, some of them are very limited in what they address. So what we wanted to do with our grant program is to really make it inclusive. So, you know, the application itself is really essay form. We've tried to make it as easy as possible for someone to apply for a grant, and we want them to explain, you know, what they want to do and why they want to do it, and then make sure that it's a practitioner who has a good success rate and, you know, that we know and you know, is familiar to the community, you know, the autism community. So that's kind of the goal of that program, is really just to get parents who are looking, you know, maybe they've been doing biomed for a long time, but they, you know, they want to try something else, or they need more funds to continue. And I think that's a big thing. You know, there are people that make a good living, but once you've maxed out, because there's, you know, not enough insurance coverage for most of these things, once you've maxed out your credit cards and your 401k, there's no more funds available. So, you know, it's really just, you know, it's taking a look at those type of folks too, who've come a long way with their child but want to do more, and now have financially, you know, financial limitations. So it's just trying to give them a different avenue to go to.
So how are you going to raise money for the grants, or are you looking to? You're not looking to individual funders. You're looking to granting organizations to fund you?
No,
we
are a 501c3, so donations are tax deductible. We have just kicked off a donor campaign. So, yes, we are looking for individual donations, and you can donate at teamtmr.org. We also have a number of events coming up that will help fund our programs as well. And, yeah, we will look at, you know, some grant programs to see if there's something that we could apply to obtain funding for our program as well. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that works out for you, simply because people who understand what the expenses are, how extraordinary they can become, they're usually people who are experiencing this themselves and are kind of stretched to the max. So I'm hoping that there are organizations that will also fund you without having the caveat of requiring it that it be a traditional, not traditional, I will not say that. Traditional is homeopathic, but beyond allopathic medicine, that they will be funding you to do the kinds of things that you need, even if you have insurance. They will only fund allopathic medicine. They will not fund homeopathic medicine. for example, Dr. Carley, who treats children, she reverses vaccine-induced diseases, insurance will not cover her. And yet, if I have an autistic child, I certainly would be sending my child to her. And this, who's going to cover this expense, you know? If this is the kind of thing that you could fund, wow, what a tremendous asset.
Right, and that's definitely the goal. You know, I think, though, we do have an opportunity. There are allopathic physicians out there that are doing great things for our children, so we definitely wouldn't want to exclude them. So if there is a grant that we can, you know, obtain funding with, that, you know, we can break that out and make sure that the funding that comes from that grant goes to MDs. But, you know, certainly, or, you know, ABA facilities or things like that. I mean, there are so many needs in this community that I really think that, you know, if we just take the time to, you know, designate, we'll be able to reach different, you know, reach into different pockets to fund
right.
these programs.
Well, I'm very excited about this. Now, I was talking to someone who has an autistic child, and she is starting to do a monthly bowling outing with parents of other vaccine-injured children. And I thought, oh, what a wonderful idea. Is this something that you might coordinate, something that would be a social event for families?
Yeah, that is something that we probably would be interested in doing. Again, we're starting those meetups, you know, the pilot meetups in Chicago, and we're kind of going to see what works and what doesn't. And then as we figure that out, we'll roll them out, you know, in more places.
Well,
but, I mean, I think the bowling idea is great.
Yeah, bowling is great. We'll talk to Kathleen Saravalli. She's very committed to giving children who are excluded interaction. So I think that's a major thing because when she gave the first party, the children were looking forward to it for months in advance. And they're looking forward already to next year's party. But there's got to be more than one party a year, you know? And that's where they're thinking of starting a bowling league. Or, you know, or maybe churches would host different events. I don't know. But once you have a large network, all these things can be accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. My own son enjoys bowling. We took him bowling for the first time last summer, and I really didn't know how he would do, but he loved it. And we recently took him ice skating, and again, we weren't really sure what was going to happen, and again, he loved it. So it's really, you know, we have to be careful as parents not to underestimate our children either and to let them try everything and see, you know, see what they're good at because it's surprising sometimes.
Well, you know, I just interviewed Candy Waters, autism artist. Her mother and father, Sandy and Robert, and they were saying that they would never have known their child was as artistically brilliant had they not tried to help raise funds for a special education program. So the woman who ran the program said, "Well, could your daughter paint something that we could sell?" And they're like, "I don't think she can." Well, give her some art. Let her try. And that's how it started. It started because they were trying to help a program to help children like their daughters. And in so doing, they found their child was quite extraordinary, you know? So experimentation with different ways of, and of course, engaging the children themselves in the process is even wonderful. Look at the wonderful thing that came from this.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's funny, that's how we found out, you know, I mean, these trial and errors are how we found out my son could do all kinds of things that we weren't, you know, 2 years ago we didn't think he would sit through a movie, but not only did he sit through it, every time we go near the theater, he's requesting to go, like, let's go to another movie, you know. So it's funny, like, they can, you know, as a whole, I think we just have to make sure that we don't, you know, don't place the limitations on our own child because they rise to the occasion many more times than not.
Well, tell me about your child before and after the vaccine or the multiple vaccines that you believe are the cause of his problems. Tell me what his type would like and what his intelligence is, or is it a he or she?
It's a he. My son, Harrison, he's a twin, and his twin sister is completely neurotypical. He was born, you know, 4 weeks early, but came home with us right on time, you know, in the 2 days. His progress was very similar to his sister's. You know, they did everything on time. And then really at about 6 months, he crashed and burned. And it was very dramatic, and I think because we had a twin, another child, we saw a very remarkable, drastic change right away. We couldn't deny it because here she was taking off, and he was just crashing and burning. I mean, he went from, you know, cooling and looking at us and tracking objects to just sitting in a corner, drooling, rocking, banging his head, you know, whenever he could, rubbing his stomach. Like, there were so many things, and we didn't understand what that was. We knew something was wrong, but we really didn't, you know, we didn't have any experience with autism, and we didn't know what it was. We just knew that something was wrong because his twin sister wasn't doing any of that. And so when we went to our pediatrician, we really insisted. You know, she kind of said, well, he's a boy, and we said, we don't care if we waste money. We want to go get him evaluated and see what's going on. So he was evaluated very early. I mean, by 11 months, he was in there being evaluated. And, you know, at 11 months, he had the speech of a 0 to 1 month old. And he, you know, they said all these things were wrong. And at home, he was vomiting all the time. After everything he ate or drank, he would projectile vomit. And so, I mean, we knew that there was a big problem. And so the thing that we were very fortunate about is with the twin, we really couldn't pretend that any of this was normal. And we, you know, we sought treatment right away. So by 19 months, he was gluten-free and casein-free, and all of a sudden he started turning to his name the day after we pulled dairy out of his diet. And so we were like, well, if that works, you know, maybe this stuff isn't really crazy and we can, you know, try something else. And we saw one of the top, you know, autism doctors at that point, and he put us on the path. And we made some progress, and then we did some alternative things. We tried homeopathy, and that completely took away his constipation, and he began to jump and do all these things with both sides of his body working together that he couldn't do. And we saw more progress. And every, you know, we've been very careful, I would say. You know, I don't treat my child as a science experiment. I've done a lot of research on what, you know, the different treatments that we're interested in, because there is a risk always involved. But, you know, I won't let that turn into complacency just because it's something, you know, new that I haven't tried before. And he's done really well. I think he's 6 now. And really, we're almost done with, you know, the symptoms that are called autism. What we're really left with at this point is apraxia, and that's really our big issue. He's just now starting to talk, which is wonderful. You know, we have some consistent words. When he comes out with a word, it's, you know, a full sentence, and we may or may not hear that one again, but it's becoming more and more frequent. So we're really tackling apraxia very hard right now. That's what we're working on. But the autism symptoms themselves have really abated. So I think, you know, in the next year or two, our goal is probably to mainstream him. He's, you know, doing kindergarten level work right now and doing really well. So we're very hopeful. But it's a long road. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, is it a long road. And you have to be dedicated to it completely. I'm sure you don't work.
I did up until December. But before that, we're very fortunate. We have 4 grandparents. They all live in the same town, and they are all very, very supportive. And he was in an amazing school. It was a private school, and they were wonderful. I mean, the things that they taught him so that he never got frustrated. You know, when he was 3 and, you know, he couldn't talk to us, they taught him to sign, and so he could sign everything that he needed. And then, you know, at 4, they said, your son can read.
Wait, they taught him sign language?
Sure. Yeah, they did.
Wonderful!
And so, Yeah, it was amazing for us because we needed a way to talk to him. He couldn't, you know, the apraxia really limited, you know, his speech and his ability to communicate, and that opened up a whole new world for him. And then what the school found out was, you know, they had a book that they would put a picture and a word in, and he would sign those words, and so that's how he built on his signs. Well, one day, you know, he walked over to the book, and they rearranged the book every day. They put the pages in different order, so he's not memorizing, you know, the order. But they hadn't put the pictures back, and they just had words. And he kept signing. He flipped through the book and signed everything. And they were like, "Hey, Harry's reading." so it was. I mean, at four, we were like, "Oh my gosh, really?" And then, you know, they cracked open an iPad, and they said, "Let's see what he knew." And it was amazing. Like, you know, because on the iPad you can say, like, "Here's four words. Which one is rat?" And he would point to rat. "And which one is ball?" And he would point to ball. And so, you know, I think that's been an amazing tool for us. Definitely, you know, you can't use it 24/7, but it's been an amazing tool for us to really uncover all he knows.
Yes, absolutely. This is really interesting. Thank you. What is now the school that he is going to? Is this a school that is throughout the United States, or is it just an individual school?
It's an amazing individual school. It's called Able Academy, and it's in Naples, Florida. And we actually moved to Naples because we took a tour of it and fell in love. I mean, it's like a magical place. I don't know how to describe it. The things that they do there, they just believe that every child is able to do things and that we shouldn't place limitations on them. And they really work to find each child's individual strengths, and they build that up so that the child gains confidence, and then they work on the things that are harder for them. So it's really just an amazing program. Their model is being studied at universities to replicate nationally. They are a magical, magical group of people. I can't say enough great things about them.
Oh, I'm so happy for you that your child is well situated. I really mean that. It's such a concern to make sure that not only, of course, your first and foremost concern is that your child is safe, especially if they have a hard time communicating, and that he's growing. That's wonderfully good news. Thank you for sharing that. I hope that they will spread out, because I don't know a lot of really top-notch programs, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I know. They're few and far in between, the really, really good ones. We were very fortunate.
Well, I just feel fortunate when I find a school that does not require children to be vaccinated. I believe the Waldorf schools are not pro-vaccine. So if that's the truth, you know, at this point, I'm just looking for schools that will allow our children not to be diminished by vaccines. And as I say, you know, why are you vaccinating children to go to school when they're going to need extraordinary help because they've been vaccinated?
I don't think that many people understand that whole connection. You know, people, unless you're personally affected and you really start digging into the research, most people do as they're told. I know I did when I was a new parent. I wanted to make sure my child was safe, right? That's what they tell you. You want to protect your child from all these. So I did. And, you know, only after he's sustained the damage did we really dig in and say, what the heck happened? And how can we make sure that we don't do any more damage? But, you know, I mean, that's part of what we try to do at Thinking Moms is to reach that population of people that are pregnant and say, hey, read this book. Like, think about it. You know, just know that there are options. Whatever you choose to do is your decision, but educate yourself first.
Right, right. And unfortunately, everybody, for every person I know who is educated, is because they now are in the situation you have found yourself in and so many others. They wait. Nothing is urgent. Nothing is really... It doesn't seem to get through until it's too late. And you had the incredibly good fortune of having twins, so you had something to compare it to. all of these other mothers who are being told by the doctors, oh, it's a phase, or he's colicky, or, you know, they have nothing, no way to compare one thing to another if it's their first child. And they I'm sure, are extraordinarily frustrated in being told by people they're told are the authorities, they're not being given the truth. So, you know, my mother did not figure out that my sister was vaccine injured till I was 50 years old. She had been given so much misinformation. And so I was always perplexed and always questioning her because I couldn't understand why my sister was like this. And I never knew, since she was so much older than I was, that she had ever been normal. So all of these things, I can't believe I was 50 till we all figured it out, you know? It's crazy that many years can go by with people scratching their heads and in wonderment. So anyway, now, what would you recommend people read? For example, you have a book, you've published a book. Why don't you tell us a bit about this book?
Sure. So the book is The Thinking Mom's Revolution, Autism Beyond the Spectrum, and that book is published by Skyhorse Publishing. We're going into our third printing, and that's really an account of, you know, what happened to each of us. So it's a good read in terms of, you know, if you want to see, you know, if you want to hear the other side that you don't often hear in the mainstream about what can happen if your child has too many toxins either injected into them or, however, you know, not all of our kids and the 24 of us got autism from vaccines. We had one very typical 15-month-old that went in for anesthesia and never, you know, and came out with autism. So, and we do have some other experiences as well. But that being said, that, you know, that's kind of that book. I think there's a great book on the market right now called The Business of Baby, and by Jennifer Margulies. And that book is an amazing look. I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's definitely one to put on your reading list. It's an amazing book. And it kind of details out what goes on, you know, all this marketing to babies, and she kind of goes into ultrasounds and the damage, you know, that can be caused there, and the research coming out of Yale on that, and so that's one that I recommend to all pregnant moms. That and Healing the New Childhood Epidemics by Kenneth Bach. I think that's probably the basic primer that I recommend, you know, whenever we have a new parent.
What was the name of the one you just?
Healing the New Childhood Epidemics by Ken Bach. He's an MD in Rhinebeck, New York. But it's a good, you know, it's an easy to understand book to kind of, you know, he makes it very simple to understand what's going on with vaccines and toxins, and, you know, it's a very easy book for some parents to be to read. Some of the books, you know, are great, but they're more difficult to read. Like Children with Starving Brains, great book, hard to understand if you're not in, you know, kind of deep in this. But the Healing the New Childhood Epidemics and definitely The Business of Baby are two that are good. Also, The Vaccine Epidemic, that's another great book. And we're, you know, we're friends with the authors of that book, but that's another great book to take a look at too. It kind of gets into the science of everything.
Well, I'm wondering, because there are a lot of pediatricians who are bullies. I don't know why they're bullies. You can say that perhaps there's an economic incentive or a professional incentive that makes them want to vaccinate people in a dire way, it appears. But and even they'll do it behind your back. I know that happened to one of my children. He was vaccinated before I knew he was going to be vaccinated. He was already vaccinated. Another child of mine I was told that it was one of the required vaccines when it was completely optional. So the question is, can you create a list of doctors who will not do this to your child?
There's actually a list out there. If you go on the Dr. Sears website, you know, Dr. Sears in California, we love him. He's a great pediatrician, Bob Sears. But if you go to AskDrSears.com and just type in vaccine-friendly doctors, there is a full list of doctors in the United States that will take you without vaccinating. So it's already done. No need to duplicate it.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. What an incredible resource. This interview right this minute is the most valuable thing in the world, what you just told me. So to ask Dr.
Yeah, I wish there were more doctors on the list, but, I mean, we definitely, that's how we found our doctor, through that list.
Well, I can't thank you enough for that, because I really don't know what to recommend to people. I'm at the point where I'm telling everybody, just homeschool, because here in New York State, there was a child who was inoculated in school. This is happening kind of frequently. I am hearing from people who know people personally. There are no links associated with what I'm saying. But in this particular case, there was. A child was given an H1N1 vaccine in the school, and the parent sued because they didn't approve of this, and she won. And then the health department came in and overrode it, appealed it, and they won because we are still under the pandemic laws of 2009. They have never been lifted, and it was an H1N1 flu shot. So it leads you to believe that not only can this happen in New York State from this moment forward, but probably in other states as well. It leaves you in a position of feeling they can do anything they want to our children and get away with it once they're out of our sight. You know, and
it's scary. It really that scares me because you know they don't. If that's done without parental consent, they don't know the family history. They don't know. I mean, we know vaccine reactions are real. I mean, there is a vaccine court created by the government, so it is acknowledged that there are a population of people that have vaccine reactions. So even if you don't believe that vaccines cause autism, even if you don't believe anything else, there is. I mean, there is a court established by the government, so there is something. So now if you vaccinate without consent and you don't know that there's a history of reaction, you're taking an awfully big risk, you know, with another family member. So I feel very strongly about that issue as well. My kids are instructed, if anybody comes near you with a needle, you run and you scream and you don't let them vaccinate you until they talk to mommy. You know, that's what my kids are told.
Well, I have to tell you, a grandmother I was speaking to another grandmother, and the child, her grandchild said that he had received the flu mist in school. So this is the first that the grandmother knew about it. Turns out the mother knew nothing about it. Turns out they went through his backpack and everything he brought home from weeks prior, and there was no notification of it. So this child was just vaccinated in school. She overheard two kids in a local high school saying they received the HPV vaccine in their high school. Now, mind you, I've been running up to Albany for years fighting such a law where they could administer vaccines for sexually transmitted diseases without the parents' consent, therefore without the knowledge. And we've won. We've won and we've won again. How can this be happening? So this is where I'm very, very uneasy in terms of from what I understand from Autism Action Network, they're putting vaccine clinics in the schools now. So I don't really know what to say other than at this point to parents, homeschool, at least in New York.
It's definitely, you know, and that's, you know, if that's an option for you, that's great. It's where, you know, both parents have to work, then what do you do?
Well, that is, again, right, exactly, if that's an option. And now we have this full cap. It's a criteria. They can't allow more than 1.2% of children to be not fully vaccinated. Turns out, and you won't find the link about this either, But you will find a letter to principals saying that there is a criteria of a cap of 1.2%, if you can imagine. That's a 98.8% mandate for this full schedule. But they are fining the principals $2,000 personally per student who exceeds that cap. So don't tell me that's not a law. Don't tell me that's not being treated as if it is. If a principal can work and lose money doing it because they're being personally fined for each student that exceeds this ridiculous cap, I am, this is why I need